Johnson. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 3 p.m., and that means we're talking money. And I couldn't be more humbled and privileged to welcome my next guest, Dorothy Brown, the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at Georgetown University Law Center and author of The Whiteness of Wealth: How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. Dorothy is a nationally recognized scholar in the area of race, wealth, and tax policy, and she also currently serves as an inaugural member of the Treasury Advisory Committee on Racial Equity. Welcome, Professor Brown. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
This is so critically important. Over the last couple of weeks, nearly every day, in various ways during this half hour of my show, we've been talking about this fundamental fact that we tax work much more heavily than we tax wealth and the investment income that people earn. And this has a particularly pernicious racial wealth disparity impact. So, but I want to start at the very beginning, because you began in a place thinking that tax policy was neutral, since tax laws don't mention race at all. And your research led you to the conclusion that it actually does have this disparate racial impact. Tell us about your evolution. How did you end up studying this, and what has your research shown you over time?
So I grew up in the South Bronx, and I dealt with racism regularly. And I knew I wanted to be a lawyer, but I decided I wanted to do a type of law that had nothing to do with race. Racism shaped so much of my day-to-day life. I didn't want it to shape my job. So I said, oh, I know, I'm going to be a tax lawyer because the only color that matters is green. So I go about my business. I go to law school. I get an LLM in tax. Meanwhile, as a good daughter, I'm doing my parents' tax returns. And I'm getting the idea that something is wrong. I'm doing everything right. Their tax return is very simple. My mother was a nurse. My father was a plumber. Their incomes were roughly equal. Some years my mother would make more than my father. Some years my father would make more than my mother. But it was in like more than $1,000. And I didn't give it a second thought. I just knew something was wrong, even though I was applying the law the way it was supposed to be applied. So fast forward, I become a law professor, and instead of an investment banker, which is what I was doing when I was doing my parents' tax return, I had time to think and I had time to read. And I read an article that asked the question, how do you know there isn't a race and tax problem if you don't look? I almost fell off my chair. I'm like, race and tax, really? So I said, okay, let me look. And the first thing I discovered was the IRS and Treasury don't publish statistics by race.
And I think that's
really important.
That is revelatory. It's like, between me and you, Dorothy, we could stop talking right there and be like, if you ain't measuring it, you know something funky's going on. Because like my spidey sense goes right away. Like, oh, they're not tracking racial demographics. That's fascinating, that. I'm sorry. Continue.
No. Thank you, Maggie, because that's like a really big part of this story.
Yes.
The narrative that taxes, of course, are race neutral. Why would we track it? We don't disadvantage anyone. We don't even collect the data. But what we know is, for example, there's a study out of Stanford in January 2023 that showed if you were Black and filed for the Earned Income Tax Credit, you were 3 to 5 times more likely to be audited than if you weren't Black. So this agency that says, oh, we don't collect race, you know, finds a way to use audits as heat-seeking missiles towards Black taxpayers, right? So step one,
we could talk about auditing the Earned Income Tax Credit and how stupid it is to chase those dollars when we got billionaires dodging in the lowest effective tax rates and go ahead, friend. I'm just popping out of my chair here on the other end of the radio.
Exactly. So once I realized that the data wasn't available, I had a choice. I could say, oh, well, I guess I can't study it. Or I could say, wait a minute. This seems odd. And let me, instead of looking for tax data, I looked at race data and applied my tax lenses to it. And then I was able to unpack the mystery of my parents' tax returns, which really is about something called the marriage penalty. Mm. When two people get married, their tax rates could stay the same. They could go up or they could go down. If your tax rates go up because you pay a higher tax as a result of getting married, we call that the marriage penalty.
Yes.
If your tax rate goes down, we call that the marriage bonus. Well, couples like my parents, where the spouses earn roughly equal amounts, get hit with the marriage penalty. Mm. So my parents were paying so much in taxes because they were married to each other and they contributed roughly equal amounts. And that was just the beginning. That was just the tip of the iceberg. Once I started down this path, whichever tax provision I looked at, I found racially disparate outcomes.
It's like, I hate using this movie reference, Professor Brown, but I feel like it's the Matrix. Like once you see it, you can't unsee it. And then you see it every single place.
Yes.
You say in your book that the system of wealth building in the United States, and if folks have been listening to the show, you know that we value income earned from wealth more than we value as a society, because our tax policy tells us so, then we value income earned from work. So the system of wealth yes. building, we already know, is prejudiced against work. But you say further that the system of wealth building, prejudiced against work, is also designed to build white wealth, not black wealth. Why is that?
Because of the types of assets that are subsidized through our tax laws. So let's pick home ownership. That's one of my favorites,
yes.
right? So the majority, like 74% of white Americans are homeowners. The majority of white Americans have been homeowners since at least 1950.
Yep.
In 1940, the majority of white Americans were not homeowners. But thanks to FHA insurance, thanks to government intervention, the minority of white American homeowners became a majority between 1940 and 1950. Well, those programs expressly excluded Black Americans from benefiting from it. We had redlining. We had an FHA that would not insure mortgages in Black neighborhoods. Okay, so anytime we have subsidies for homeownership, we are subsidizing a raced asset. And it's a raced asset because our federal government did it that way.
And in case people have never heard this before, I want to emphasize this point because it's so crucial. Before the FHA and the federal government insured and underwrote basically home purchases for the middle class, you had to basically walk into a bank and plunk down the money to buy the house, or at least the vast majority of it. It wasn't, oh, I got 20 Absolutely. Or 30% down. That's what changed between the 40s and the 50s. And the redlining Right. that Professor Brown is speaking of was published by the federal government, and it basically drew red lines, because warning, around neighborhoods that were predominantly Black and brown and said, this is not a good investment. This is not a good insurable mortgage risk. And as a result, Black and brown families didn't get the federal assistance, the federal underwriting, the federal subsidies for housing. And we know now that yeah. housing boom for white households is how white families built generational wealth that we see
exactly.
today in many ways.
That's exactly right. So we have tax subsidies for home ownership, not just with the mortgage interest deduction. There's a tax break if you sell your home at a gain.
Yeah.
Up to $500,000 of that gain, if you're married, you can receive tax free.
Yeah.
So when we talk about who's a homeowner and who's going to sell a home at a gain at $500,000, we're really talking about generally white
folks.
Okay. So the way we build wealth through homeownership benefits white Americans more than Black Americans, even when we compare white homeowners to Black homeowners, because white Americans and Black Americans do homeownership differently. White Americans tend to live in almost all white neighborhoods. Black Americans tend to live in racially diverse or all Black neighborhoods. And if a Black American is like the only Black American in an all-white neighborhood, then they will have access to that increased wealth. But it comes at a price.
Yeah.
It comes with you being the only Black person in your neighborhood and your neighbor perhaps calling the cops on you one day when you're trying to get in your house like they did on Ving Rhames in L.A.
Yes.
Or if you have children that go to school, your children are going to be tagged as discipline problems when they do the exact same thing their white peers do.
And expelled at higher rates and disciplined at higher rates.
Absolutely.
All of we got to put a pin in it. We're going to come back. My guest this half hour is Professor Dorothy Brown. She is the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at the Georgetown University Law Center and author of The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and What We Can Do to Fix It. Because I want to get to that part. We know about the redlining. And listen, here in Wisconsin, in the Milwaukee Metropolitan Statistical Area, the most segregated MSA in the country, that book, The Injustices of Place, right? That,
yes.
The Color of Law, all of these things. We're going to give folks some resources. We're going to put that on the show page for today so you can read more about this. We're going to continue to break it down with Professor Brown, and we're going to talk about what we can do about it. When we come back after these brief messages, it is the 3 o'clock hour, folks, and that means it is Maggie talking about the millionaires and money, money, money here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're joined by Professor Dorothy Brown. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, everybody.
Don't you have homes?
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
Or the evil that lurks within a facially, racially neutral tax code, but actually is not at all racially neutral in impact. That's what we're talking about this afternoon on Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My special guest is Professor Dorothy Brown, who's the Martin Ginsburg Chair of Taxation at Georgetown University Law Center and the author of The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. Thank you again for making time, Professor. We were talking about basically, the federal government underwrote, I'm using that term in a broad sense,
yes,
underwrote white middle class home ownership coming through the 50s. Home ownership, the equity, the increase in value has built wealth, intergenerational wealth that then helps with educational attainment, acquiring more wealth, being able to invest. We have a tax code that privileges wealth over work by taxing wealth less than work. It shows up in another pernicious way, too. You know, we passed these laws in the 60s and the Fair Housing Act and the Civil Rights Act, and it was supposed to fix these things. And yet, Professor,
we
know that Black families walking into a bank to get a mortgage, less likely, even if they're way more well-qualified to receive that credit than a white family. Some of the statistics here are really shocking. Share a little bit of that with us, what your research has shown, Professor.
So what you see is subprime mortgages. Black and Hispanic families were targeted for subprime mortgages more than white income, white taxpayers with lower income levels. So what you, because subprime mortgages paid the mortgage broker at a higher fee than a regular mortgage. Yes. So even though a Black and Hispanic American were qualified for conventional financing, the mortgage broker steered them into subprime lending. We also see appraisal differences that an appraisal can come to a home, and if they see Black pictures on the wall and they think this is a home owned by a Black American, they will value it less than, and this has been tested, they come back and they this Black homeowner had their white neighbor sit in the house and remove all the Black pictures. The appraisal went up like a couple hundred thousand dollars.
A couple hundred thousand dollars. I, dear friend of mine was like, Maggie, come on over. We're having a painting party. I said, why? I said, well, she was selling her house. She's like, I got to whitewash the house so it looks like white folks live here. And that's what we did. She literally like unblacked her house.
Yes.
It was, it had people, does anything look too Black, too ethnic in the house? Folks, if you haven't seen these statistics, Google is available to you. There's a whole system of information out there on the internet. You can Google house lending disparities, appraisal disparities by race. The studies are legion. It is proven fact. And here's the next thing that I wanted to ask you about, Professor. If we look at all of this as getting driven, the sort of first domino was, again, this federal underwriting of white home ownership, memorialized in redlining, discriminatory lending policies. It goes on and on. Then we doubled down on this as a society by tying the funding of public education, right, to property taxes, exacerbating the problem.
So, absolutely. And there's a book out by Andrew Carl, the historian, called The Black Tax, where he shows how racially discriminatory property taxes have always been and continue to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Black
Tax. It's almost depressing.
It is very depressing. So
almost.
But that's right. Because I want to ask you, what can we do? And here's the thing that I love about this. When I talk to white folks who get all, you know, ornery about talking about issues about race, I say, listen, we do better by Black folks and make the tax code work more fairly. It also will work for you because you work for a living. So how do we make this system less racially disparate? How do we make our tax code more fair?
So that's, you know, you raise an excellent point. And one of the things I always emphasize is tax laws may disadvantage Black Americans more, but it also disadvantages white Americans. And we cannot lose sight of that.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, there's a tax break for retirement accounts, but about half of white Americans don't have it. So it may be 2/3 of Black Americans, but half of white Americans don't have it. So, you know, reforming our tax laws are going to help white Americans who work for a living, like Black Americans who work for a living. And, you know, one of the things that I think needs to take place is taxing income from labor at the same rate that we tax income from stock and income from capital. It's unfair that I work hard. I work every day and I pay tax at a high rate. But if I sit at home and check my balance to see if the dividend was put into the account, I pay tax at a low rate. I'm just sitting there doing nothing, right? That's how whiteness of wealth is built. We have a tax break for inheritance. So gifts and inheritance. And let me be clear, it's easier to build wealth when somebody gives it to you.
Yes. Money makes money, and it's sure easy when you start with a lot of it in the bank before you've worked a minute in your life. So we're talking about the difference between income tax levels and capital gains tax. We're talking about the estate tax exemptions. No damn good reasons for any of this. In fact, the argument that I make is people who work need to work. People who invest, that's the gravy. That's the money they got left over after they've paid for medical, house, roof over their head, food on the table, heating, electricity, and shod their children. They got leftovers. That's their investment money, right?
That's right. That certainly should not be taxed at a lower rate than the tax on wages.
If somebody's listening right now and they want to learn more about this, if they want to ask a candidate an insightful question about this, Where should they go to learn more? And what is the one question people should be thinking about asking candidates for whatever office we're talking about?
Well, so if it's a local office, I would ask about how they're trying to make property tax assessments fair, right? If it's local, I would do that. If it's national, then I would ask whether they support taxing income from wages equal to income from investments. And if they say no, find another candidate to support.
Yeah. If you work for a living, if you've got a trust fund and you just sit at home on your patoot, your economic self-interest is in it. Don't tax that wealth so much. No.
That's right.
Tax the work. Professor Brown, it is really a pleasure and a privilege. I have such deep respect and reverence for your work. I would love to have you come back again because this is so critically important.
We just started.
Oh, wonderful. I love that. Her book is The Whiteness of Wealth, How the Tax System Impoverishes Black Americans and How We Can Fix It. We'll put that title as well as the title of a couple of the other books that we mentioned during this segment in our show blurb for today. Thank you again, Professor Brown. For this edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, she's not a millionaire. She's one of us folks that work for a living. Thank you so much, Professor.
You're welcome.
Be well. We've got more Maggie Dawn Show coming up next with my friend and yours. The host of the new Dom Salvia Show is going to be joining me. We'll riff on the debate, maybe talk about some memorable presidential debate lines. There's a lot of them, Brian. A lot of them. So you're going to catch the farm update, and then Dom and I will be back. My little buddy's coming on the show. I'm so excited. Keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You now have the Maggie Dawn Show, and now you have the Dom Salvia Show. We've joked about having the Maggie Dom Show. Dom Salvia joining me here in the WAUK studios. You can join us for our last half hour. We're going to have some yucks. We're going to listen to some sound. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I thought, let's start with Trump admitting that he lost the 2020 election, shall we?
Yeah. What? I mean, what's Charlie Kirk going to say about that?
Yeah. Or Nick Fuentes. I actually have Nick Fuentes.
Oh, maybe that's who I was thinking of. Fuentes.
Yes, he had a complete and total meltdown. I will read it to you in a moment, but let's listen to Trump admitting that, yeah, it turns out he actually did lose the election.
Say it again.
So I've done a lot of debating. Only as a politician, I never debated. My first debate was the Rosie O'Donnell debate, right? Famous Rosie O'Donnell debate, the answer. But I've done well with debates. I mean, I became president. Then the second time, I got millions more votes than I got the first time.
Here it is.
I was told if I got 63 million, which is what I got the first time, you would win. You can't not win. And I got millions of more votes than that. And lost by a whisker.
What?
Whisker. Wait. Lost by a whisker.
Lost by a whisker.
Turns out he lost.
He lost.
Lost by a whisker.
What? Whisker.
Hey, just so you know, everybody, I know exactly how much a whisker is. If you wanted to measure the amount of what a whisker in voting terms would be.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more that we have.
Lost by a whisker.
So he knew all along. How does that presidential immunity thing feel now, dear Supreme Court?
Right.
How do those 1,600 defendants, the J6 defendants, the Enrico Tarrio, how's it feel? Turns out he knew all along. He lost by a whisker.
By a whisker.
He says, a whisker.
And he's
lost by a whisker.
Said similar things in the past, alluding to the fact that you lost.
This was.
And guess what?
But this is, I lost.
Yes.
We could just cut off the end. I lost.
I lost.
Yeah.
I lost.
Lost by a whisker.
I lost.
Loser.
Yeah. It'd be nice if those folks he told to come down and be wild and you know, march up to the Capitol, if maybe he would have told them that then.
Yeah. You know, while police were getting beaten and knocked unconscious.
Law and order.
Law and order. I love the police. Here's what anti-Semites.
Who is Law and Order, by the way?
Law and Order. I think it's related to Leon.
We've digressed.
Yes.
Here's anti-Semite, Nazi, white supremacist, homophobic, Christian nationalist. All around, really nice guy. No.
Oh, okay.
Right-wing nut job, Nick Fuentes, who, of course, Trump has had to Mar-a-Lago to have dinner with.
Well, yep. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Of course.
Here's what Nick Fuentes said after Trump's interview, which was on September 3rd. It was a week ago today on the Lex Fridman podcast. It's episode number 442. Lex Fridman, that is Fridman, excuse me, Lex Fridman podcast, episode number 442. CJ, go listen to it. Here you go. This is Nick Fuentes freaking out. Okay. Here's what he had to say. This was on his podcast. So why did we stop the steal? Why did anyone go to January 6th? Why is anyone sitting in jail? Why did anything bad happen to anybody? Why did everybody get censors? Why is everything bad that has happened to people that were involved? Why did that need to happen if you're just going to walk it all back and say, oh, well, I lost? Well, it would have been good to know before 1,600 people got charged. It would have been good to know that before I had all my money frozen, was put on the no-fly list, got banned from everything, lost all banking and payment processing. It would have been good to know that before I, in 2017, dedicated my life to this 18-year-old in college. It feels like a big ripoff. It just goes to show what a tremendous betrayal it is. It's just, I can't even keep up the whiny voice. It's just a callous indifference to the sacrifices that his supporters made on his behalf. Nick, we tried to tell you.
Right?
Everyone tried to tell you and the 1,600 knuckle-dragging J6 insurrectionists. We all told you. You're still a racist, misogynistic, hate-filled, fascist, xenophobe.
And he's mad because what? Trump gave up the story? He dropped the line that he actually
lost by a whisker.
He actually lost. Is that what his big complaint is? And let me tell you something, Trump. Oh, I was told if I got 63 million votes, I'd win.
Unless the other person gets more.
This is what I'm saying. Are you kidding me? This is how it works. It is literally a game of numbers. And I remember specifically back in 16, David Plouffe was on the Devil's Advocates, and he guaranteed a Hillary victory. He guaranteed it to me. So was that?
Did she have the election stolen
from her? And of course, there was some concerns with the Russian influence and whatnot. But you know what she did? She didn't march to the Capitol with her supporters and crap all over the walls and beat the hell out of cops.
No.
She acknowledged the loss the next day, I believe, and it was on. And here we go, President Trump.
That's why Liz Cheney calls the man depraved. It's why Liz and Dick Cheney, there was a weird moment yesterday afternoon because I was calling, we were talking about Liz and Dick Cheney coming out with this letter on Friday, endorsing Kamala Harris, saying that they're going to vote for her, calling out Republicans who haven't made the commitment to vote for Kamala Harris because he is, her words, depraved. Dick Cheney's words, a threat to democracy in our democratic republic. I was referring to Dick Cheney as Darth Vader. And of course, then James Earl Jones passed away. Yeah, the voice of Darth Vader passed away. R.I.P.
Yeah.
It came to my attention that Liz Cheney also had some other recent things to say about Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Shall we take a listen?
Let's do it.
She speaks slowly, so it takes a minute to get through all of it, but it is worth the wait, my friends, I promise you. This is Liz Cheney being interviewed at a symposium that was put on by The Atlantic, I believe just last week. Let's take a listen. The long one. Let's do the long one.
How do you think she should proceed?
Look, I think that
you know, every opportunity that Donald Trump gets to show the American people who he is, he pretty clearly, and look, his running mate is doing this too. I mean, you know, this is my diplomatic way of saying it. They're misogynistic pigs.
Liz Cheney's got jokes. She's got jokes, everybody. Woo!
And I think it's I think that will become clear. I mean, I think that the Vice President Harris has demonstrated, you know, particularly if you watch the speech we were talking about at the convention, right. A focus on seriousness and substance and policy, and you know, I think that you know, for people who sort of say, well. I'm going to, if you have conservatives who might say, well, I'm thinking of voting for Trump because he's a conservative. Mm-hmm. He is not a conservative. And when you look at the contrast in terms of policies, for example, when it comes to things like NATO, when it comes to things like the support of Ukraine, when you know you look at the proposals that he's made to impose massive tariffs, for example, you know, I think that there are a whole range of policy issues that raise very serious concerns. But you know, we would sometimes you hear from Trump supporters that you know they want to just let Trump be Trump, and like I endorse that, like let that guy go, because the more people see him and the more you know, frankly. At the end of the day, I think that women around this country, like, we've had enough.
Right.
And I think what that means Alice. Is that people have got to step up and realize, I mean, again, look at what J.D. Vance says on an almost daily basis about women. I mean, that guy's got a real women problem. I don't know what it is, and I don't want to psychoanalyze him.
He's a weirdo.
Yes.
And there's a lot of eyeliner jokes to be made in there. But
Liz got jokes.
But I think that, you know, at the end of the day, if you listen to what he says about women, you know, and you look at Donald Trump and what Donald Trump has done and what he says about women, these are not people that we can entrust with power again. But that means women and men. But we've got to get out there and vote. We got to make sure people are registered. You got to drive people to the polls. It really, really matters this time.
Liz Cheney, folks, the conservative of conservatives, Republican, former congressman from
Rhino.
Yeah.
Rhino.
from Wyoming, telling it like it is in breathtaking simplicity, including eyeliner jokes. Dom, your reaction. I mean,
such a nasty
trust
woman.
Fund.
Such a nasty woman.
I mean, obviously, you know, in some ways, Nick Fuentes was right in his comments about Trump losing and what that did to him and everybody else who, quote unquote, believed it. Liz Cheney is right in this. Dick Cheney is right in talking about this in terms of a threat to democracy.
Yes.
And when the war criminal Dick Cheney, Darth Vader himself, says, that Republican that make a candidate is so dangerous, we can't be having anywhere near the halls of power again.
You might want to listen to Darth Vader.
I just think you might want to listen to him. When someone says about the power of the force of Darth Vader, listen to him. You know, he's Darth Vader.
I mean, just to summarize, like, the last week's haps, okay? We got Donald Trump announcing the weave. Right?
Oh, yeah. Man.
The weave. You know what the weave is?
It's like
I'll
a rope.
Talk about
it's like
nine,
a rope and dope. Yeah.
Nine different things, and they all come brilliantly together. And it's like friends of mine that are like English professors. They say it's the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. No, it's not. We got the weave. We got the 45-minute press conference about rape. He brings up allegations from 20 years ago, and he's like, well, that didn't happen. Then why are you talking about
it? Well, it's just another example of the sexual assaults that didn't happen, and let me tell you about
more of them. Yes. Thank you for reminding us, Donald. Maybe Kamala can bring up each and every one of those.
I would hope so.
Say their name. You got J.D. Vance on women, part 342, version 4. You got Trump on women and this child care.
Oh, policies.
Yeah, but not tariffs. 45, again, the rape thing for 45 minutes. Disrespects veterans, the Arlington controversy.
Oh, that was so long ago. Are we still talking about that? We're still talking about that?
400, Trump disrespects veterans. Number 487, take three.
Say veterans, Trump says suckers and losers.
Yeah, right. You got Tucker with the Nazi sympathizer, Holocaust denier. Elon's going to be the efficiency chief. Everybody wants that in government.
Leon's very concerned about illegal votes.
Leon, yes. A new indictment alleges MAGA influencers are on the Russian payroll. Candace Owens is totally gone full Jewish hater. What? Wait a minute. This is, I believe that this was Charlie Sykes quoted William Shakespeare here. Hell is empty and all the devils are here.
Yeah.
From The Tempest.
We are here. It is any one of these individual items in a normal world. The world I was growing up in.
Disqualifying.
Any one of them.
A
single one. Dining with Nazis, disqualifier.
Done. Rape?
Disqualifier.
Fraud?
Disqualifier.
Getting your picture taken on a boat with someone who's not your wife, Gary Hart? How'd that go for you?
Oh, terrible. Can't possibly. Oh, you gotta go, man. The weave. That's a great point. What English professors? What English teachers? Who, why, where, what, when? You know, I'd like to know who that professor is. Cause
who, what, why, where, and when? If he answered just three of those in any answer, I'd be totally happy with it. All the devils may be here, but I got one former devil, now the host of the Dom Salvia Show, which follows me every day. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. We'll talk about some memorable presidential debate lines when we come back. A little quiz for Dom and the listeners. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lost by a whisker.
You are one pathetic loser.
They're misogynist.
Of the Maggie Dawn Show, which is this wonderfully enlightening political talk show that you're listening to here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm again finding myself with two very fancy gentlemen, of course, producer extraordinaire Brian Kelly and friend of mine, friend of yours, and host of the new Dom Salvia Show, my little buddy Dom. Great to have you.
Yeah, Maggie, thank you.
What are you looking for in the debate?
Oh, competency,
so much. Yeah.
You know,
normal.
After the last debate, I was worried, but I had high expectations. This time I'm less worried. I still have high expectations.
Yep.
And I'd hate to put it all on the first black woman, you know, because women get stuff done.
Black women basically have saved America. Another black woman's going to do it again.
I hope so. I really hope so. And Donald Trump needs to be put into his place no matter what game he brings. We know the game. I think it was Nikki Haley being asked about Donald Trump's performance. And she was very, very impressed that he'll stick to the policy.
You should stick to policy.
The answer of the policy, if it is policy, if it's that question about what specific legislation would you support to help lower the cost of childcare in this country? If that's a policy answer for 2 minutes, I want to see more of that. I want to hear more of that. And I'd love to hear her, you know, rebut him. And another, you know, you got to stick within the rules of the debate. I understand that. But I am looking for her to light his ass up, maybe.
Yeah. I loved this text that came in earlier from Ken Bob in Dailyville. I wanted to give a shout out to Ken. Hope you're still listening. Thank you for doing so. He says this: my worry is the same as yours, Maggie, that Kamala will get tied up trying to address every ridiculous lie that Trump is going to spit out. I hope Kamala's staff, here's the great idea. Dear Kamala Harris campaign staff, Ken Bob from Dailyville has a really good idea. He says, I hope Kamala's staff have created some kind of online resource that she can simply refer to in the debate and say, that's another lie, Donald. I won't have, I'm not going to waste any of my debate time explaining it. Simply go to www.trumplies.org for the real story. Right. Now, here's my plan. Like, that's genius.
Yes.
I love that idea. He actually thinks that Trump is going to be really nasty, like referring to Willie Brown as Kamala Harris's pimp. I mean, like, that there's just no basement.
Yeah.
There's no bottom. And I think that that's likely.
It's possible, certainly.
Pretty likely.
As he gets pushed more and more into a corner, as this becomes more and more dangerous for him, in the sense that if he does not win, these trials continue, and if those trials continue, and you know he gets sentenced for what he's already been convicted of, and perhaps he gets convicted on some of these other charges, you know that's going to be very problematic for a guy who's not in the White House. So that kind of pressure, and then the pressure of a competent, a debate opponent,
and a woman
who is Black, that I think he finds a little attractive.
Yeah, he said as much.
He's bouncing all around. How is he going to handle that?
I hope she wears some, like, really seductive perfume.
right, that we can't tell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he'll know.
Just stuff that just gets him intoxicated and
like
even more incoherent than he normally is.
Yeah, pheromones. Just as a woman, I am fascinated by what's about to happen because this guy hates women. Hates them.
Well, I mean, you know.
Except for Ivanka, who he would date if it wasn't his daughter.
If it was his daughter.
But hates women, hates Black folks, known racist, misogynist. If she can get under his skin.
Her presence on the stage is already doing that. Skin, yeah.
Hit him with the pheromones, the nice perfume, maybe a nice set of heels. You know that he whined about her standing on a box behind the lectern? No box.
Hey, you know, as a short guy, I take a little offense to Donald Trump's.
You resemble that remark?
You know what I mean? I can't wear the heels. You know, my feet are a little thick.
Just so folks know, Dom and I went to get lunch today, and the lady addressed us behind the counter. Ladies, what would you like? mean,
was it the gray beard or the long hair? I wasn't clear
the
exactly.
Flowing locks, my brother.
That's fantastic.
It's not the first time that's happened to me. Nor the last.
And the thing is, if you look at you twice for a second, you've already grown another beard.
Just blink. There's more beard coming. Keith from Middleton, what are you looking for at the debate tonight?
I am really hoping that he tries to pull the same stuff that he pulled in 2016 with Clinton and tries to walk around behind her. And she just turns around and says, get your ass back to where you belong. And just like that, get your ass back where you belong.
How about get your fat ass back to where it belongs?
Well, or something along the lines like, I don't appreciate convicted rapists, you know, lurking behind me.
Yeah.
Please step away and go back to
your podium. Yeah. The difference, remember the Clinton-Trump debate? They were on stools, so they weren't, like, anchored to podiums. I'd be surprised if that happens, but boy, would it make for good debate moments. Let me ask you, here's a presidential debate trivia with Maggie and Tom.
Oh, no, I didn't know there'd be a test.
There's a testicle.
I would normally cheat off of your paper, Maggie.
Yeah.
How's this going to work?
This is not the first time I've heard that from a man. All right. I'm going to give you the quote.
Okay.
If you can name the person that said it, that's the point. If you can give me the year, then we can be done with the test.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Here's the first one. This is probably one of the most famous ones. I will not make an issue of age in this campaign. I'm not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Oh, Reagan?
Yes!
Yes!
Ding, 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 ding! You want to take a gander at the year?
84?
Yes! Very good. Very good, Dominic. Of course, that was Reagan, who was 73 at the time, who was then the oldest nominee until now.
Until now.
Because Trump is 78. And he had been kind of tired and looked a little confused during the first debate against his Democratic challenger, 56-year-old former Vice President Walter Mondale. And my favorite, this one's the gimme, the binder's full of women, Dom.
Oh, Romney.
Romney. Private equity millionaire talking about binder's full. I would love Trump to say something like binder. I got binders full of Black people. Yes, it's all the rental applications you and your dad denied back in New York City.
Rejected.
Rejected. folks, that's all we got time for. Amazing.
Oh, man.
I think Dom and I are going to sort it out so that we're each week we'll make an appearance
on each other's show. We're going to have some fun.
Always good fun.
Thank you.
Stay tuned, everybody. His show is up next. He's Dominic Salvia. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's going to close us out for this edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be talking about the debate of debates. As I say, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
By a whisker.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.